Welcome to the Sailor Noob Podcast, where a superfan and a noob talk about the original Sailor Moon episode by episode. I'm your host, Mikan Hana, joined by my co-host.
I'm the co-host and the noob. My name is Caliban, and I'm 100% pure adrenaline.
That's right. And we're a couple of magical people ready to moon crystal power make up this episode. Sailor Moon is brought to you by Luna P. Run away from your problems in style with this magical transformational ball. Luna P. Is there anything you can't do?
Do not taunt Luna P. Yeah.
Yeah.
Luna P's in town. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say something that's a little sad as we start the show off.
Oh, no.
But it was announced recently that Kentaro Miura had passed away earlier in the month. And he, of course, is the creator, writer, and illustrator of the series Berserk.
Yes.
Which was a long, long, long-running manga series and also was turned into two different animes and a couple films, video game, merchandise, big phenomenon. And he was pretty young. He was 54 years old and will definitely be missed.
Yeah, pretty influential too. Like influenced a lot of other anime and manga series and video games as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Taking that sort of dark fantasy aesthetic, you know, and just running with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this ain't your daddy's Escaflowne or something like that. You know, it's just like a dark, gritty, totally seinen, you know, series
sure.
in Berserk. But
sure.
worked out a couple other things, too. He actually worked on a manga in 1992 called Japan. Simply Japan.
Okay.
And he illustrated it. It was written by Buronson, who was the guy that did Fist of the North Star.
Okay.
And it's just interesting. Like, it's a really weird thing, but it's like about a Yakuza, and he falls in love with a TV reporter, and they're having this conversation about how what Japan is right now, like, culturally.
Sure.
And they compare them to, like, the Romans wiping out the Carthaginians.
Okay.
And maybe they're the Carthaginians. Uh-huh. And then an earthquake happens, and Carthaginian ghosts take them to the future, where global warming has destroyed the islands of Japan. They are submerged. And so the Japanese people are scattered. They have, like, had this diaspora across the post-apocalyptic Earth. And it's kind of about, like, Japanese identity. And it's something that, like, you know, Americans didn't invent patriotism.
Oh, God, no.
We just weaponized it, literally in some cases. Mm-hmm. But I always find it fascinating to read other nationals' musings on their own kind of, their own culture.
Sure.
You know, and like,
yeah,
and
their,
patriotism.
Their nationality and everything. Yeah. Yeah,
and right. And this is 92. So this is like, if it was like in the 20s or 30s, maybe not so much. Like post-Russo-Japanese War, everybody's really excited about being Japanese. But this is, you know, a little safer. It kind of reminds me of a manga by Osamu Tezuka called Message to Adolf. Let me finish.
I think I've vaguely heard of this before.
It's about three different men named Adolf. Yes, we'll just get out of the way. Mm-hmm. One of them is Adolf Hitler.
Right, of course.
Another is a guy named Adolf who's a Jew living in Japan. And then there's a third Adolf. I can't remember which one that is.
Sure.
But it's also about Japanese cultural identity.
Sure.
And seeing it from the inside, seeing it from an outsider's perspective.
Right.
Them getting involved in the war and the aftermath of that and...
Interesting.
Yeah.
And
or guy with a big sword. Either way.
Either way.
Both totally valid.
Yeah.
In this wonderful world of manga.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
We're open to everybody. And Osamu Tezuka, of course, is often thought of as being the grandfather.
Oh, now he's the grandfather?
Of manga.
He used to be the father.
Oh. I've always heard grandfather.
But it's probably the great-grandfather at this point.
Yeah, well... I've long passed, but a really great creator. I actually went to the Osamu Tezuka Museum, which is really cool, and I highly recommend, if you're ever in Japan, go check that out.
Yeah. So, yeah, rest in peace to Miura-san.
Yes. Today we are talking about episode number 73, Ufo Shutsugen, Sara Waleta Sela Senshi Tachi in Japanese. A UFO appears. The Sailor Guardians abducted. The English translation and the English title, Rubius Evens the Score. Part one of two.
Part one of two.
Yeah.
A two-parter.
A two-parter.
It ends on a cliffhanger.
Well,
and I'm jumping off cliffs, extreme style.
Yeah.
Woo!
The thing about this, so it's interesting to me that the one of two. I'm
just a maniac. It's just screaming about.
I'm sorry.
Feel the rhythm. Feel the right. Well, that's Cool Runnings. Never mind.
I don't know if it was considered a two-parter, like, in Japan, but, like, in the English dub, they considered it a two-parter.
Oh, sure. I mean, we'll talk about it.
I mean, there's a cliffhanger, ends, you know, for
yeah,
sure.
Totally. You're coming back for more.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, I was looking at, we're in the 70s, you know, the days of Moon Tiara actioning somebody in a kind of draped, flowy costume. Those days are over.
Oh, long over.
But I was kind of browsing back through the old the old episodes of Sailor Moon original a while back, mostly looking for the one where the girls are doing the Kansei dialect. You know, they're the...
Oh, the Kansei men, yes.
They want to be a star.
Yes.
So they're doing the comedy duo thing.
Yes.
And the animation has changed a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, she still has pigtails, Luna's purple. But, like, it's refined a lot. And I think we've pointed this out here and there when we notice something like Luna's sexy shoulders or something like that. But it really has, like, it's a lot different.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just going from, because this is a whole other series.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know if it's the same crew animating it or same art direction or whatever. Or if they're veering off more from the original designs, the Takeuchi designs.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying I don't want to be forced to pick between, but I like where we're at now. I think it's the animation's smooth, it's dynamic.
Yeah, I think so too.
It looks good. I think we're heading in a good direction. Yeah. Maybe by the 200s, it doesn't go over 200, maybe by the late 100s, it'll be like, you know, a new generation. Sailor Moon 3000.
Yeah. I could see it changing again.
Because you're
then,
going from the
sure.
early 90s to like the mid 90s. And even then, like, you know, anime was developing and changing.
Yeah. And I mean, you think about it, like 5 years doesn't seem like that long of a time. But I think if you think about in the span of the show, and especially in the span of like an animated show, that's a decent chunk of
time.
It'd
be lifetime in video games. That'd be an entire generation.
Gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really like it for the most part, except for that one episode you mentioned, Luna's sexy shoulders, like, or her luxurious neck.
They were trying something.
I don't know what they were doing. I don't want my cats to look super humanoid. Yeah. That's okay.
Nah, my cats don't need to be hot.
No.
No hot cats.
She can talk. That's fine.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Yeah. Don't make her look like a human, though.
But not like talking sexy.
No, that's weird.
Okay, let's please move on.
All right, let's go and why don't you tell us or give us a summary of the episode.
I'd love to. Autumn has come to Tokyo. The leaves are falling and we see Chibiusa and Luna P standing on a dock. Well, Chibi's standing, looking out over the water. And this may be possibly the dock where we first saw Chibiusa appear from the sky.
I think so.
But who can say?
Yeah.
Chibiusa is struggling with the knowledge she now has that Usagi and her friends are the Sailor Scouts, the girls who have saved her life so many times.
Yeah.
And also that Sailor Moon possesses the Silver Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny that she says, she's thinking about it, and she says Rei and the others are the Sailor Soldiers, meaning I guess she still feels a connection to Rei after the dinosaur adventure that we don't talk about.
Yes. Yes.
Chibi sprints off to who knows where as we pan up to see an ominous sparkle in the sky above Tokyo. That sparkle is presumably the Black Moon Clan's UFO, or UFO, which we cut to the inside of. Inside the Rainbow Room, Rubeus looks down upon Tokyo, plotting his next move to kill the rabbit and take the Silver Crystal. Abruptly, a peal of feminine laughter echoes through the room.
Yes.
Each of the five mirrors emits a beam of green light. They all converge at the center of the room, and out of them steps a green-haired woman in green knee-high boots and a green sleeveless mock-neck mini-dress and a pink feathered fan.
Mm-hmm.
Very mod.
Mm-hmm.
She's from the 60s. The 2060s! It's got Joker colors, too.
You and I see colors differently. We've talked about this off air, but
pink or purple and green is Joker colors.
I see her dress as being black, but you see it as being green.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I see the fan as being red, okay, but you see it as being pink.
A conversation to come.
Okay.
For sure.
All right.
But I mean, she is laughing.
Oh, she's definitely laughing.
We live in a future society.
Yeah.
Rubaeus addresses her as, oh boy, Esmerad?
Yeah, Esmerad, yes.
That's what we're going with. Mm-hmm. And she says, long time no see. She joins him at the window and she says, so this is the 20th century Tokyo. It's tiny. It's not very pretty. How can I make it in a place like this? Rubaeus seems surprised at this, but she says, oh, you didn't know? You screwed up so much that I've been sent to take over your duties. Rubaeus says, Bacana! Prince Demando would never give up on me.
Uh-huh.
I see people as disposable, but that doesn't apply to me.
Yeah, right?
And she says, I know, right? You must be really incompetent to make the prince so mad. And she runs through all of his failures. You know, you lost the Ayakashi sisters. You captured exactly 0 crystal points. No rabbit. No silver crystal. What have you been doing this whole time?
Yeah, right.
Rubaeus is not happy about this, but she says, anyway, I got it from here. I'll see you around. And she beams out the same way she came in. And Rubaeus thinks, if I can just kill Sailor Moon and get the crystal, I can appease the prince's anger. And I know where the crystal is.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't do anything with that knowledge, but we'll just move on.
Yeah. True.
We cut to the location of the crystal as Usagi Tsukino runs home from school. She bursts into her house in a hurry. Her mom, wow, her mom, I haven't seen her in a while,
says,
didn't you have a test today? But Usagi says, I gotta go! And she changes out of her school uniform quick and she runs out again. Chibiusa watches all of this and thinks, if I can get the silver crystal, I can save my mom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna get that poo fired too. Totally useless. Speak to her manager. Usagi heads for Hikawa Shrine, where a sailor meeting is currently in progress. Artemis explains that the number of UFO sightings in the city are up. Join the club. Us too.
Yeah, right?
And everyone is thinking it might have something to do with their enemy. Usagi arrives late and nearly goes face first into the bowl of cookies that Mako made in home ec.
Yep.
Back to the meeting, the girls decide that since the enemy is after Chibiusa, they'll need to guard her well. You'll notice that she's not here. Currently,
I know that was like my first thought. It's like, guys, big plot hole
more
in your plan.
Yeah,
who's watching her now?
She is at the Tsukino household where mom is making some pancakes, Chibi's favorite. Chibi wants to know why she's making so many, and mom says it's in case Usagi and Shingo want some. And Chibi says, "Who's Shingo?"
Hasn't good one.
Really been in the show that much.
No.
No, Chibi says, you have a hard job because you have to care about Usagi no matter what she does. You okay, Chibi?
Yeah.
You all right?
No, she's not okay.
Apparently, mom is feeling that, though, because she says, I know. Do you see what I have to go through? The Usagi support group every Monday. Mom says, every mother loves her child more than anything. And Chibi, she's thinking about this. But then mom adds, but I love you more than anything, too, fake daughter. Good save, mom. Chibi laughs sweetly, then not so sweetly heads up to Usagi's room to get that crystal.
Yeah.
She sees Usagi's uniform on her bed with the brooch containing the crystal. She thinks, it's so important, and she just left it. That's a good point, Chibi.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've ever seen her without it, but if she hadn't left it, this episode couldn't happen, so just go with it.
Yep.
Chibi grabs the brooch, but before she takes it, she thinks of all the times that Usagi saved her as Sailor Moon. Just then, Usagi arrives back at home, and mom tells her there's pancakes, but she says, oh, I'm already full of Mako's cookies. And that is somehow the last straw for Chibi.
I know.
She thinks, screw Usagi, I'm taking it. I'm going to save my mom. Luna and Usagi enter her room looking for the brooch, and they see that it's gone, and the window is open. On the street, Chibi is running away thinking, I hate her. I'll never trust someone like her. And still, the UFO hovers over Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
Looking down over the city, Rubaeus is visited by creepy wise guy.
Yep.
Wise guy says, it's time. The rabbit has the crystal. Repeat, the rabbit has the crystal. She will appear in the woods of twilight. Head northwest. Pretty specific.
Yes. Yeah.
Just drop a pin, dude. At Hikawa Shrine, the girls get a call from Usagi telling them the crystal has been stolen by Chibiusa, and the group splits up to look for her. I hope they're going to the park and the dock on the lake, because that's where she is.
Yeah.
Back there, Chibi, holding her key, says, I'm coming back to the future, Marty. I mean, Mom. And she holds her key aloft and says, oh, guardian of time, open the doorways of space-time to me. But nothing happens.
Uh-huh.
Don't you look like an idiot? She can't figure out why nothing is happening, and she starts crying. And when this kid starts crying, I'll tell you. She explodes in a burst of light.
I mean...
That's a tough age.
Yeah. But she, like, doesn't associate that with, like, the bad guys finding her, even though it's happened every time.
Is there something about the rage of a child? Because you get that with in Dragon Ball Z, too, right? Gohan is always, you know, when he gets angry or he's sad or something like that, and suddenly he's, like, knocking out Sabertooth Tigers.
I mean... Maybe, I mean, it's just, it's from the perspective of animators who are parents and, like, the cries of their children are so strong, and, you know.
I got, like, I got eight more pages to draw. Shut up.
Right. I don't know.
Well, Chibi stops crying just in time to see Rubeus floating over her. He raises a hand to blast her, presumably with flashy balls. But he gets a surprise as burning mandalas and a love me chain strike him and blow up part of the dock.
Mm-hmm.
Ray runs in to grab Chibi, but as the smoke clears, Rubeus is still standing, or floating. Mercury says, Mars, get that baby out of here.
Yeah.
She casts Shaban spray, covering the area in fog. Rubeus says, shoot, as is customary.
Yes.
Sailor Mars is fleeing the scene with Chibi in her arms when Chibi says, Ray, you can put me down. Ray does, and Chibi says, I already know who you guys are, as the other sailors arrive. And I'm not going to thank you, she says, because you're Usagi's friends. You just saved me to get the brooch.
Uh-huh.
Ray says, that's not true. We were worried about you. Chibi says, Usagi isn't worthy of this brooch. She's self-centered and spoiled. And Ray says, okay, that might be true, but don't think of her like that. We love her. She's fun. She's totally concerned about you. Chibi isn't having it, and she runs off and is almost hit by, like, three cars.
Yeah.
Luna P transform into an adamantium hamster ball or something.
Seriously.
Back in the Rainbow Room, Rubeus is keeping an eye on the situation. In the Juban shopping district, Usagi, Rei, and Ami, in their civilian forms, have been looking for Chibi. From a darkened alleyway, Chibi spies on them. And while they're talking,
I know.
Right behind Ami, I think, you can just see a little side of Chibi head. She's looking right there.
You guys are really bad at this.
But Chibi's getting tired, though. It's getting late. A clock strikes 10 p.m., and we see that it's the giant clock from Juban Cemetery, last seen in episode 43.
Yeah.
Where Usagi met with Oniwa Bandana.
Yes.
Bonbon. Mika and Mako think, most kids are in bed by this time. She's probably pretty tired.
Uh-huh.
We cut to Mamoru's apartment, where Mamo finds Chibiusa has fallen asleep against his door.
Mm-hmm.
We get a flash, suddenly, of a desperate chase, presumably in Crystal Tokyo, where the four Sailor Scouts are ferrying Chibi away from Crystal UFOs. They're shooting at them. It's very like it's a Terminator-like scene in the future. Kyle Reese. The Scouts say that they have to get Small Lady to safety, and if Sailor Moon was there, they wouldn't be in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then a ray from one of the UFOs hits near them, and they're all thrown to the ground.
Yeah.
Just like in the original Terminator. This picture burns up, and then it transitions to the future, to the past.
Right.
This is presumably a dream that Chibi is having, as we see that Mamo has put her to bed. She wakes up in fear, but Mamo is sitting on the bed, and he introduces her to Tuxedo Hand. What? Mamoru has a puppet dressed as Tuxedo Mask, and the puppet offers her a rose.
Uh-huh.
I have so many questions.
I do too.
We will save them till the end.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tuxedo Hand says, don't cry or this rose will wilt. It's a lot of pressure, dude. People from the future are trying to kill me. I don't need a pushy puppet.
Yeah, right.
It's okay if I shed a few tears. Chibi's taking this in stride. She's wondering, like, is this the real Tuxedo Mask?
Yeah, I know.
I guess I've always assumed that he was far away when he's on like a crane or something, but is he actually small? She asks him, Tuxedo Mask, is Sailor Moon strong? And Mamoru says, she's invincible.
Mm-hmm.
Just then, Chibi's stomach growls, and Mamo says he'll fix her something. She requests pancakes. Nothing for Tuxedo Hand, thanks. The doorbell rings, and from the hallway, she rings the doorbell, but then Usagi's like, is Chibi there?
That's so Usagi, though.
And Chibi wastes no time transforming Luna P into a parachute, and she jumps out of the window.
I know.
100% pure adrenaline, man. Come on, Johnny. I know you want me so bad you can taste it like acid in your mouth.
I know.
Usagi runs in, and she and Mamoru are pretty chill about a 6-year-old danger magnet throwing herself out of a window.
I mean, especially Mamo. I think he like watches
he's just
her
like,
do it.
She jumped out of the window.
She's down there now.
You just missed her.
Yeah, right.
You're insane.
I know.
The puppet's like, jeez, come on, guys. Chibi lands safely on the street. No cars. Empty street.
Thank God.
And once again attempts to go back to the future. She opens a time portal above her and she begins to float towards it. But the portal dissipates and Chibi falls to the ground as a gigantic UFO appears over Azubujuban. Mm-hmm. A spotlight appears on Chibi and Rubeus appears, saying, "Silly rabbit, when you create a space-time distortion, I can detect it with my ship. Time to die." Mm-hmm. "Not so fast," says Ray as she and the Sailor Scouts reveal themselves. You know there's a lot of show to get through when the girls just show up in costume and we don't take 2.5 minutes to transform.
Right.
Rubeus says, "Fine, I'll just kill you all." But Jupiter, Mars, and Venus all launch their signature attacks against Ruby to no effect.
Mm-hmm.
Mercury says, "There's a strong barrier surrounding him." She's a smart one. Rubeus says, "Enough of this." And he blows them all away with a gesture. Ray tells Chibi, you gotta get out of here. But Rubeus summons a beam of dark light from the UFO, which covers the sailors. Ray, as backup leader in this situation, says, "We've got to use Sailor Planet power." The girls are worried that without Usagi, they won't have enough power, but they've got to try. They join hands and summon all their power and go Super Saiyan, just as Tuxedo Mask appears to take Chibi to safety. Rubeus responds by redoubling his attack, and the inner Senshi are sucked up into the UFO just as Usagi arrives to see them be abducted. Usagi is furious with Chibiusa and moves to strike her, but Tuxedo Mask holds her back. "We don't hit kids in this city."
Yeah, right.
"You come into my city in front of my kid, and you try to..." Usagi says, "This is all your fault, Chibi." And all Tuxedo Mask, Chibi, and Usagi can do is look forlornly up as Rubeus cackles in triumph.
Yeah.
Part two to come.
Exactly.
End of part one. It's kind of like, it's like a lot happens, but not a lot happens. It just kind of like kicks in and just goes.
I feel like a lot of it is Chibiusa coming to terms with what we already know that she knows. You know, that's a lot of it. And I think that's maybe one reason why it feels like not a whole lot happened.
And it's her making a decision, too, just about, you know, if she's going to take this thing or not. I mean, you'd think, like, as a kid who is 2/3 of id, right?
Yeah, right.
Just add a K. She'd just be like, "Oh, just gotta take that because I need it." But she has, you know, she pauses and she's like, "Well, am I depowering Sailor Moon if I take this away? Does she need this to do what she does?"
Right.
And the answer is yes.
Absolutely.
It was absolutely yes.
Yeah.
So she was right to be concerned about that.
Do you think if, like, she hadn't taken the brooch, that Rubeus would have been able to take the Senshi?
Well, apparently he knows where she is whenever. We see him a couple times just sort of checking things out. And you're like, dude, the pink slip is in the mail. Do you know what I mean? Like, you need to do something.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know, it's a cartoon for kids and there's only 20 minutes. So there's not a lot of time. But my headcanon is that he's waiting until the kid, he can see everything from up high.
Yeah.
And he's waiting for the rabbit to get the crystal and he's not going to make two trips.
Right.
That's why he waits so long. Yeah. But if he just went after her and Usagi had remembered her purse that day, Sailor Planet power him and then they got it.
Right. Exactly.
I don't know. He's got this huge UFO. He doesn't need to drive it apparently because he's just floating around.
I know.
So I don't know if he's got a crew or it just runs itself. But yeah, I don't know what it's going to take. They used all of their powers on him and he's like, yeah, well, whatever. I got this powerful shield.
I think it just runs on like... probably the same energy black crystal
runs on sass.
Runs on.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Full tank of sass. There's a couple different things that I need to talk about.
Go for it.
Let's just do Tuxedo Hand.
Yeah, please.
As I've called Tuxedo Hand.
Yeah.
So many questions. Where did Mama learn ventriloquism?
Because
he's good. He's pretty good at it.
He is pretty good at it. It's a little surprising, honestly.
Is that, did he grow up in a circus?
Is that a talent?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he was an orphan and he lost his memory.
Well, so that next question, is Mamo studying early child psychology in college? We don't know his subject, I guess.
I kind of think no, but that would make more sense, wouldn't it?
Because this is sort of, you know, there is like puppet therapy.
There is.
Usually for children.
For children, yes.
Or, you know, for funny movies like What About Bob?
Yeah, right.
And so it makes me wonder, did Mamo get child psychologized after his parents died?
Maybe. I can see that as a possibility, a little kid, for
probably
sure.
About Chibi's age. You wake up in a hospital.
Yeah.
Parents go boom, boom.
Yeah.
And so you need to come, you need to bounce back from that and work through it.
Yeah.
And maybe we're puppets involved.
I think it is very likely, is what I think. But where did this puppet come from? Did he make it?
He must have, right?
Right? Like, was he thinking, was he like working on his ventriloquism anyways? Or was he thinking,
I knew he was a secret nerd. No, I knew it.
Right?
He's going to do close-up magic next.
He's totally, spoiler alert, he's totally a nerd. Or was he thinking, Chibiusa is around. She's a kid. What do kids like? I'm going to make a puppet just in case, you know, I need to cheer her up when she's over here sometime.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
He's like, last time it got kind of weird because, you know, she was over here and then Usagi came in and I was like making her dinner.
Right,
so
right.
Maybe I'll do like a puppet show next time. That seems more innocent.
Right, right. I got to have.
Because I don't own a
kids.
TV. He's definitely an I don't own a TV guy.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
But, you know, in all fairness, me and her mom are probably I don't own TV people too. So.
Oh, no. They don't have a TV. They don't have a phone.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, nothing.
Well, she has her communicator watch, but.
Yeah, right. They had to teach her how to use it.
Yeah, right.
Luna's like, do this. And then I wanted to talk about going back in time, because in this episode specifically, you know, in the past, past episodes, when she tries to go back to the future.
Yeah, head explosion.
She just, you know, just holds it up and a thing opens up and she goes in. But in this, she specifically addresses the Guardian of Time.
Yeah.
In this episode.
Yes. I'm not sure why that is. I don't know what you're asking me. I don't know if I can say anything.
Eyes going over to the sticker pile here.
What did you guess?
I know what it is.
What is it then?
Because I know that the Greek god of time is Kronos. Makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. That's where we get chronometer,
chronology.
Exactly.
Chronicle.
Yes, that's where we get that from. His Roman counterpart is Saturn, which is one of our planets in the solar system.
It is.
And perhaps there's a sailor who represents that planet who has the ability to control time.
It's complicated.
Oh, okay, well, anyway, that's
If you want a sticker,
it's not a sticker situation. But this is what people come to the show for, to watch some idiot stumble around and try to guess things about what's coming up in the future.
Well,
this is the noob part.
I don't really know how much I can say.
Now comes the part where you try not to say anything, and saying anything, end up kind of saying something. But now you're closing down. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Good.
We're done.
You got it. we're done here.
We're done here. Yes. What did you think of? I guess we'll talk about her a little bit more later too. But what did you think of Esmeralda? What you've seen
so far?
Yeah.
Love her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hope there's a lot more. Can't wait to see more. Love everything she's got going on. I think it's a mock neck. Her hair is so long. I couldn't tell if it was a halter or a mock neck.
Well, it's like a partial turtleneck. Thing.
Yeah. That's a
mock neck. Yeah. Yeah. That's what it is.
But yeah, love that. Love the boots.
Oh, the boots are great.
The fan is ridiculous, but it's like, you've earned it. At this point,
mm-hmm.
You know, you look great. Pick something ridiculous.
Yeah.
A dog or a little purse or something like that. But then she picked a fan. So.
She did.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see more of that. I at some point in the future, I want to see Chibiusa, you know, turn Luna P into a snowboard or something like that. This is, look, we're in the middle of the 90s
right now.
You know, we've got the parachuting, but we need, like, she needs to, like, do a, even Wonder Woman was skateboarding. You know, in the 80s.
Yeah.
So she needs to do more of that stuff. But I love the parachute.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Terrifying.
Absolutely freaking terrifying. And I can't.
If it was cut out of the Deke dub, I would not be surprised.
I don't think it was.
Oh, well, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. I mean, at least.
Can she become two? If you can become a grill, there's like more than. That's not a singular thing.
There's a lot of parts.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like she's becoming geometric forms. Mm-hmm. She'd become a first aid kit that you can take bandages and things out of.
Yeah.
We don't know how that works.
Nope.
So she could have become a parachute and a helmet. Like, at least a little helmet for this kid, right?
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that.
What if a crosswind just puts her right into the side of the building?
Yeah, a little helmet. Yeah. You have the pigtail sticking out of both the straps.
Yes.
It'd be super cute.
Right.
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
Make it work. Yeah, I could totally see that. I also just love how the turning point for Chibiusa is when Usagi just totally doesn't respect or care that her mom's worked so hard making those pancakes. And she's just like, her whole attitude is like, I can never trust someone who doesn't want pancakes.
You know? Yeah, it's a little weak.
It is.
But I like the fact, because, I mean, you know, it could be, this girl is embedded in this family on false pretenses, you know, and every day they fight and kill robots and monsters. So there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of trust required. There's a lot of, like, last minute rescues, and there's a lot of chances for resentment. So I like the fact that they set up that moral dilemma with a little child.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that the turning point for a little child was pancakes.
Right?
It wasn't like, she didn't save me that one. She left me at school that one time, and I had to comfort that little kid who peed his pants or whatever.
Right.
It's none of this stuff. It was just
There's
like...
all these things that have happened.
She didn't like pancakes? Oh, hell no.
So Caliban, you finally show your face. Just in time for me to blow it off.
It's fitting you chose to hide in this abandoned movie theater, Mika and Hana, because for you, the show's over.
Big talk, but soon you'll be as dead as all the well-loved celebrities we lost this year.
When I'm done, they'll be cleaning you off the walls like COVID-19!
Wait, where's your face mask?
I thought we were gonna fight outside.
Oh, come on!
I mean, if the murder hornets aren't out there still.
Take this!
You want to watch HBO Max on my phone?
I'll start cooking some beans in this old boot. Just Enough Trope. News, reviews, and apocalyptic views every Monday on the Just Enough Trope Network.
Won't the 5G kill us?
For Kuro Kuro Miru, or Curiously Looking Around, where we talk about elements of Japanese culture within the episode, today we are going to talk about extreme sports in Japan.
Woo!
Extreme!
Do the do!
In this episode, Chibiusa basically base jumps off of Mamoru's balcony.
Yes.
And he way too calmly watches her do it. And I guess Usagi does too, but he watches, like, the entire freaking thing. He's just kind of like, there she goes. Anyways, so we're going to talk about some of the extreme sports that you can do in Japan that are popular or somewhat common.
Awesome.
So one of those is bungee jumping. In 1995, the first bridge jump site was established in Japan in Yamagata Prefecture on Honshu. And in 2001, the first indoor bungee jump site was established in Japan in Tokyo at the Odaiba Mediage building, which, as far as I can tell, is no longer there. But I don't know how long it was there. But
is it just a tall, empty building? How high?
Yeah, I don't even know.
Huh.
It was basically like... there was a note about it, like, on this other site, but I couldn't really find a whole lot of information about the actual indoor building, but I thought that was kind of interesting. The company Bungie Japan, which was started by a native Australian and a native New Zealander,
of course.
Is the only bungee company in Japan that does jumps off of bridges. The company runs 8 different bungee locations throughout the country, so pretty popular. The Ryujin Suspension Bridge, located in Hitachi Ota, Ibaraki, is the third longest pedestrian suspension bridge in Japan at 375 meters or 1,230 feet long. The bridge is suspended 100 meters or 328 feet in the air and runs above the Ryujin Lake and Dam. The bridge also gives you stunning views of both the Yamizo and Abukuma mountain ranges. And thanks to Bungee Japan, you can actually bungee jump off the bridge itself.
How do those views look upside down?
Yeah, exactly. And pretty, I think every location, of course, they, you know, they have all of the equipment, but they attach like a video camera to your helmet. So you get like, as part of the package, you get your GoPro video. So that's pretty cool. Ryujin Valley, which the bridge hangs over, means Valley of the Divine Dragon. In Japanese mythology, Ryujin was the guardian deity of the sea. The steel posts that support the bridge's cables have dragon motifs on them. Of course.
Dragon is got knee pads on.
Yeah, right?
An extreme style of dragon.
Extreme dragon ever.
The ultimate rush.
Yes.
I knew that there were extreme athletes in Japan.
Yes.
Because you'd think that, like, the idea that people have about, like, Japanese people is, like, you know, the most extreme thing they would do is, like, you know, play StarCraft for 47 hours straight.
Right.
But, or eat puffer fish. But yeah, I knew there had to be, especially in a country with so many mountains and things to fall off of, mm-hmm. you know, and giant waves.
Well, and I think it kind of depends, too, on, like, what do you consider to be an extreme sport? Like, because many people consider...
Jumping off a perfectly good bridge?
Yeah.
That's extreme.
For sure. But, like, would you consider downhill skiing to be an extreme sport?
Are you like... skiing along the edge of a giant cliff like a James Bond movie? Because then,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, but like surfing is really popular in Japan.
Sure.
Snowboarding, skateboarding. So, I mean, it kind of depends on 100% what you think.
100% extreme.
So Ryujin used to be the highest at 100 meters, but it is no longer the highest. The highest now is Gifu Bungee, also run by Bungee Japan, at the height of 215 meters or 705 feet. And that runs off of Shinta Bisoko, which is the longest bridge in Japan with a total length of 462 meters or 1,515 feet. And it runs above the Tabisco River Valley.
Hmm.
So pretty popular to do. Skydiving is in Japan is available, and there are several sites that allow you to make a reservation. And tandem skydiving, where you skydive with a skydiving instructor strapped to you, is available from Tokyo Skydiving Club. And there is a skydiver, Yasuhiro Kubo. He is frequently recognized as a top skydiver in Japan, as well as Asia. Kubo is perhaps best known for his Guinness World Record holding bonsai skydiving jump on September 2nd, 2000.
What, so, he jumped from the moon?
So bonsai skydiving is, so let me finish this whole thing because it's kind of crazy. Bonsai skydiving is a rumored form of skydiving in which the skydiver throws their parachute out the airplane door, waits, then jumps after it. To be successful, the skydiver must catch the parachute, secure it, and glide to the projected landing zone. There is no known credible evidence that a bonsai skydive has ever really occurred, according to its definition. But so for Kubo's jump, he supposedly threw his parachute out of the plane, waited 50 seconds before jumping after it, and then caught up to it and attached the parachute to himself. But details about the jump are sparse, and it is unknown whether Kubo or another skydiver held onto the skydiving rig while falling, which would then not count as bonsai skydiving. Because you have to throw your chute, catch it yourself, reattach it, and land on the landing site.
This is Catherine Bigelow directed this.
I know. And
a real Blue Flame special, aren't you? Young, dumb, and full of plums.
Right. And of his particular jump, there's no video or photographic evidence exists to support the claim, but it is still accepted by Guinness World
Records. Yeah, take it up with the Guinness Company.
Right.
Which
right.
We probably just paid to get that record.
So, and there is like a skydiver, I can't remember his name right now, who has skydived, there's video of it, who skydived off of a hot air balloon, no parachute, but he got attached to another skydiver who had a rig attached to him. So technically, that's not bonsai skydiving.
Whoa.
Because you're not throwing the chute and catching up to it. I know. I watched the video, though. It's on YouTube, so if you want to check that out.
I saw a thing with, I was just thinking about, like, remember the big deal that they made about the Red Bull thing where the guy jumped from, like, near orbit or whatever. He was like 100,000 feet up.
God, I can't remember. Was that one of the Red Bull events?
Take like a high altitude, like a weather balloon basically up. Okay. And you have to wear like a space suit essentially because there's just nothing up there. And then you jump and it's like, it's just it's a high dive. But it's like, no, you fall for minutes.
Oh gosh, I would imagine so, yeah.
And then plus you've got, you know, this suit on, so... I mean, you don't take it off like during the fall.
I wouldn't think so.
So you need an extra strong parachute. There's so many things that can go wrong. And I don't know. I got lost down a live leak wormhole some other day. But like I saw a dive where a guy, I think it was only like 10,000. I think that's low. Maybe it was a little lower. Jumped out of a plane, no parachute, nothing, and landed in a net on the ground.
Yes. Yeah. That's on there too. Yeah. Right.
And, you know, you think like, well, it's a net. Yeah, but you don't drop straight down.
No.
You have to fly like
you
a squirrel
to get
into
there.
The net. And if you miss the net, chunky salsa.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's not a soft landing.
No.
So, yeah, it's crazy. And it's so weird because it's like just the definition of bonsai skydiving is so specific.
The word bonsai was invented for that.
Yeah, exactly. So, another popular thing is whitewater rafting. It's another popular extreme sport in Japan. There are several areas throughout the country which are good spots for it. The Yoshino River is known to be the best place for whitewater rafting in Japan. Lots of rapids. Seen a lot of smiling, happy people on rafts with helmets.
Hey, if you're not smiling, it's not extreme.
Yeah, exactly. So I had never heard of this before, but maybe I'm just, not extreme enough or, live in a hole. I don't know. But, canyoning is an extreme sport that embraces finding your path down a rocky ravine and its river in a thrilling way. So you're plummeting down water slide-like cascades, jumping from the canyon barriers, zip lining into pools of canyon water, etc. So you might occasionally need to hike, but you will spend the majority of your time in the water and on the rocks of the canyon. So you're basically getting down this canyon whatever way you can.
Right.
It's crazy. So there's a popular place to go canyoning is Kamoshika Canyon in Habuka, just outside of Nagano City in a wooded area of the Japanese Northern Alps. The canyoning company provides instruction on canyoning techniques as as well as wetsuits, helmets, and other gear. So you're suited up and you got a helmet, but keep in mind, these are slippery rocks. You could definitely totally severely hurt yourself.
It's like reverse hiking.
Yeah. Yeah. So
high speed reverse hiking.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Another popular site for canyoning in Japan is Name Toko Valley, which is in the southwest part of the island of Shikoku. The valley contains Forest Canyon, which has a 40-meter or 131-feet natural water slide. Abseiling down Yukiwawa Falls and pools of deep water are ideal for jumping into as you go canyoning.
Or if you slip and your canyoning speeds up a little.
Right. Like, and I didn't even know that there was such a thing as a natural water slide, so I thought that was pretty cool, but...
Well, are we talking, like, what are we talking?
Like, it is
like a mudslide, or...?
No, it is, like, smooth rock.
Oh, and the water
just
worn it away.
Down, okay. And you can actually slide down.
I feel
down
like I've seen that in a movie or something.
Probably.
I just figured it was, like, set up by the crew.
Sounds like Swiss Family Robinson.
Yeah, I feel like Indiana Jones or somebody's always going down one of those.
Right, right.
Okay.
Exactly. But apparently that's a naturally occurring thing.
Huh.
Something else that is gaining popularity in Japan is the flyboard, or so the flyboard is a brand of hydro flighting device which supplies propulsion to drive the flyboard into the air to perform a sport known as hydrolifting, which is sometimes known as flyboarding too. So have you seen this?
Mm-mm.
It's like
you heard about this?
Yeah, right. So it's like a board that straps to your feet, and there's like jets underneath it.
Oh.
And it attaches to a hose, and the hose attaches to water, and the water comes out from the jets and propels you up into the air.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully. That's the idea anyways.
You know, those probably pollute a lot, don't you think?
I hadn't even thought about it, to be perfectly honest. Because people
complain about jet skis, I think, because jet skis, you know, have an intake, and it, you know, if you leak oil or something, just all the water that comes out of a jet ski is like polluted water, right? I think.
Probably.
So I'd imagine a thing that operates solely on just sucking in a ton of lake water. I know there's a filter on the front, but like fish or something, like, is that okay? And then just blast it back. I mean, not to ruin everybody's extreme fun, but it looks cool.
Yeah, right. So the water can propel you and thrust the rider up to 22 meters or 72 feet in the air.
Not me. not that high.
So, yeah. But people have done like choreographed like dances and stuff like that with these things. It's kind of crazy.
That's like
fun. Like, or made the water like do like loop-de-loops and stuff like that. So
that's 72 feet is like 5-6 stories.
It's
so you hit
you
the water
really high up.
You hit the water from 70 feet up, you're having a bad day.
I think so. I personally wouldn't want to do it.
You ever gone cliff jumping?
No, because I'm terrified that I'm gonna hit my head on the way down.
On what?
Cliff.
No, you don't like, I'm going to, oh, that's a good extreme. We're going to jump as close to the cliff as possible.
Oh, my gosh.
No, you're just jumping off a cliff into like a body of water, you know, river or something like that.
Maybe you don't realize this about me, but I'm actually a little afraid of heights. So
I'm in love with my head. Yeah, I said it.
That too. But like, I am so not an extreme sport person. But
I'm not either, but you get me up there and you get past the first, you know, barrier, which is fear. You know, because fear leads to, not Yoda. Bodhi's got some quote about fear in Point Break. I can't remember it now. Fear leads to hesitation, man. And hesitation makes all your fears come true.
Yeah,
this guy's not full of crap. But yeah, there's a river near where I live, and it cuts through, you know, thanks to a glacier, it cuts through, you know, a valley or whatever.
Right.
And then so the cliffs are 30 to 40 feet. And
yes.
Yeah, we went there. After I got out of high school.
Okay. How many times did you jump?
A bunch.
Yeah.
You got to climb way back up, though.
Man, it took my friends, I don't even know how much egging on to even get me to go on roller coasters. I hate roller coasters. And I went on them a couple of times, and then I was like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
I'm not doing this.
Well, I mean,
anymore.
You don't. If it's not that fun, then.
Yeah, exactly.
Why bother?
But, like, no, I get nervous like being on a bridge if I feel like there's a possibility that I might fall.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So anyway.
I'm sorry to traumatize you by making you read all these facts.
I'm so traumatized. Anyways. So moving on for an extreme sport that is extremely Japanese, Bo Taoshi, which means pole toppling, is a capture the flag like game played on sports days at schools in Japan. So I don't know if we've talked about sports days yet. I don't think we have officially. So sports days is a big thing that happens at least, I think maybe it's just once a year. And it's a big day where they compete. Every school competes in like sports. And
it's like track and field day.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a big deal.
Did you have that?
I had track and field day.
Sure.
Yeah.
There you go.
I was terrible at it. But
I wasn't going to say anything.
I did have it. Yes. So the game traditionally played by cadets at the National Defense Academy, or NDA, of Japan, and it is rumored to have started in the 1940s as a training exercise, and it is played for the NDA on its anniversary, and it is famous for its size, wherein two teams totaling 150 individuals all male players, each vie for control of a single large pool. So each team is split into two groups of 75 attackers and 75 defenders.
Wait, what?
Yeah. The defenders begin in a defensive orientation respective to their pole, while the attackers assume a position some measure away from the other team's pole. A team concedes if the pole is brought lower than a 30-degree angle, and it begins, the pole, I should mention, begins perpendicular to the ground at a 90-degree angle to the horizontal. So
sticking straight up.
Yeah, it's sticking straight up. So previously, there was a rule, in as of 1973, the pole had to only be brought lower than to a 45-degree angle. So now it has to be brought lower to 30 degrees.
Yeah, pole creep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we know about that.
So here are the basic rules.
Oh, man.
A match lasts 2 minutes. The poles can reach anywhere between 10 to 16 feet in height. A team loses when their pole is tilted to a 30-degree angle. A referee will indicate this using a flag, then declare the winner. If no team's pole is lowered within the match time, the match remains undecided and will be repeated. A team consists of 150 players divided into attackers and defenders. Offense players wear shirts in their team's color. Defense players wear white shirts. Punching, kicking, strangling, pulling heads, and similarly dangerous roughness is prohibited. Shoes, however, are banned. This is only because kicking, including kicks to the head, are allowed. Players have practically no protection except for a soft padded helmet and sometimes some knee pads. For most of the players, concerns of possible injuries caused by Bo Taoshi are overshadowed by a sense of pride.
Like rugby.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's like rugby and wrestling and yeah.
Well, yeah. Japan has a national rugby team. I saw a picture of this, and it's because I was trying to conceptualize it. Like, is are there ropes or something? No, there's just a pole.
It's just a giant pole.
And there's like a big
giant wooden pole.
Dog pile of people under the pole.
Yep.
And I don't get. I guess there's like directions. It's like this way or that way. Uh-huh. That's your direction.
Yes.
Is it like must be in like an arc? Can you go like sort of 45 degrees
to the left or right? So I've watched a little bit of a video, but it wasn't very clear to me. I assume...
Yeah, this whole thing is confused.
So there's a group of people who basically link arms around the pole. And from what I understand, I think there's also somebody who is... I forget what their
name is.
Well,
somebody like gets on top of the pole.
Yes, there's somebody whose position is to get on top of the pole and swat people away.
Right, but like the whole point is to make the pole tilt. like you're on top of the pole, you
probably
weigh 160 pounds.
The pole tilt.
Does it tilt the pole?
Yeah.
And their helmets look like they're wearing underwear on their head.
They really they're not anything. They're literally just like cloth pads.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm trying to think of, I mean, I don't think that there's like even like foam or like a hard plastic in them.
The picture I saw too, there are helmets littered around the pile of people.
I can believe
that. So apparently you lose your helmet at some point and you're like, nah, screw it.
Yeah, right.
This is Botoshi.
Yeah, and just getting hit and kicked in the head and, you know. It's fantastic. I
love
your
sense of accomplishment's going to pay your hospital bills.
I also, something that came across, I only came across it in one article, so I don't know exactly how true it is, but there's something called extreme tourism, which apparently is really picking up steam in Japan. So apparently there are a lot of foreigners coming to Japan specifically to do these extreme sport events. You know, and we'll like get like extreme sport like packages, you know, and also eat Japanese food and, you know, see the cherry blossoms and stuff like that. Yeah.
That's a little different than dark tourism.
What is dark tourism?
Dark tourism in Japan, I don't know how we'd fit this into a Kiro Kiro Miro, so maybe we won't, we'll find a way. But dark tourism is like when people go places. It's like rubbernecking. It's like international rubbernecking.
Okay.
So like if you wanted to go to Fukushima, to see the effects of, you know, the earthquake and the
atomic nuclear disaster.
Power plant meltdown.
Yeah.
Or if you wanted to go to, if you went to like, was it Colombia? Where's Chapo from? You want to go to like a South American country and see, you know, a drug lord's house that's been possessed or something like that.
Okay.
I saw a thing on Vice about this.
Yeah.
Don't judge me for watching Vice. but like Japan has like, you know, a lot of dark tourism sites that people go to.
Okay. That's kind of depressing.
Like Hiroshima.
Well, sure.
There's memorials there in Nagasaki as well.
I've been to Hiroshima, so.
And like Kobe with the earthquake and stuff like that.
There was a really bad earthquake in
Kobe. So anyway, I think it's super morbid, but I did, I went to school, to college in Missouri, and I was there when the Oklahoma City bombing happened.
Hmm.
And we went to Oklahoma City to see the site. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess in a way, I'm a dark tourist. Pure adrenaline, man.
Oh, my God. Itadakimasu with Usagi. What did Usagi eat in this episode? Well, at Hikawa Shrine, the girls are snacking on some tea and cookies. And, of course, Mako baked them in home ec class. But she made too many. And Usagi makes short work of that and scarfs the cookies down. Yeah. At the Tsukino household, Mama Tsukino, or Ikoko Mama, as Chibiusa calls her, makes pancakes, which we learn is Chibiusa's favorite. I think that's the first time we've learned that.
Are these the fat-ass pancakes?
The fluffy souffle pancakes? I was trying to figure that out. They kind of look like it, but they're like, usually the fluffy pancakes are not as wide in diameter.
Yeah, she did. These were like the whole pan.
Yeah, so I'm kind of thinking no, but they looked kind of fluffy, so maybe they're partially, I don't know.
It's hard to draw pancakes.
Yeah.
And individuate them in a stack.
It is.
If you're an animator. Yes. So maybe they made them a little thicker.
That's right.
Just to show that it's a stack of pancakes.
And this is how much she loves Chibiusa.
Standing over here like a stack of pancakes.
And when Chibiusa is at Mamoru's apartment, her stomach grumbles, so he says he will fix her something, and he asks if there are any requests, and even though she's already had pancakes early in the day, she asks for the pancakes.
She's just going from house to house.
I know, right?
Can I have some pancakes?
I haven't eaten anything today.
I have frozen pancakes.
Oh, stop it! Oh my God. Go over to Mako's house and she'll make you some
of the Mizuno house.
Oh God. I feel like I'm going to hear sad Charlie Brown music. You're in right. Oh, poor me.
I've got cram school.
Let's go shopping. I can't.
Just
I have
walking
cram
away
school.
With her head down. It's not funny.
No, it's not really. Except it is. So later on, there was a random bystander who was eating food at an Oden shop.
Yeah, it was like this. The show does not often. Well, I've complained before about how it's like just five girls running around in an empty city that's constantly exploding from robot hair dryers and things like that.
Yeah, right.
And then like just now, just in this episode, for some reason, one guy at a noodle shop's like, UFO!
Yeah. Well, I know I told you it was noodles, but I remembered wrong. So that's on me. But Oden is a type of nabe mono, or a Japanese one pot dishes, consisting of several ingredients such as boiled eggs, daikon, cognac, and processed fish cakes simmered in a light soy flavored dashi broth. So it's a soup.
Cognac, right? Like cognac, like you drink the liqueur. Cognac. Spell cognac.
Or is it cognac? C O N G J A C. How do you pronounce that?
Oh, I don't even know what that is.
Well. I have it later in my notes, so we'll get to it. So Oden was originally what is now commonly called miso dengaku, or simply dengaku.
Hmm.
So konjac or konyaku, that's the name in Japanese, or tofu, was boiled and eaten with miso. Later, instead of using miso, ingredients were cooked in dashi, and Oden became popular. Ingredients vary widely according to region between each household. Karashi is often used as a condiment. So karashi is a type of mustard used as a condiment or as a seasoning in Japanese cuisine. Karashi is made from the crusted seeds of a Brassica junica and is usually sold in either a powder or paste form.
Yeah.
Karashi powder form is prepared by mixing with lukewarm water into a paste and leaving it covered for a few minutes.
This is hearty.
Yeah, it's very hearty.
This sticks to your ribs.
Yes.
This is like a Japanese cassoulet or something like that.
So in Japanese cuisine, the konjac or konnyaku, maybe that's why I thought it was pronounced konnyak.
Konnyaku.
Yeah.
The devil's tongue.
Right. It appears in dishes such as oden and is typically mottled gray and firmer in consistency than most gelatin. So it's a gelatin. It has very little taste. The common variety tastes vaguely like salt. Usually with a slightly oceanic taste and smell from the seaweed powder added to it. And though some forms omit the seaweed, it was valued more for its texture than flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a water chestnut or,
yeah.
or something like that.
Yes.
Okay, let's play a game. Names for konjac or cognac or a yoma name.
Oh, okay.
Devil's tongue. Voodoo lily, snake palm, or elephant yam.
Those are all cognacs.
Names of cognacs.
That's yes. crazy. Why? Is it like that strong of a liquor?
No. The vegetable.
Oh, the vegetable. Oh, gosh. Cognac. Okay, gotcha. That's crazy.
And I think it's called that because the flower is really weird.
It is weird. I saw a picture of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
That's you see where the tongue part comes from.
I don't know how to describe it, but is it like the stamen part or whatever that like kind of comes out?
It's the flower, yeah.
And like it kind of droops. It's a very interesting. It looks almost like prehistoric, I feel like.
Yeah, like it's something you'd see in Jurassic Park or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I feel like you see a lot of fake plants.
Fake plants?
Like plastic what? Fake plants that look like that flower.
Oh, okay.
Like in like office buildings and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Give me some of the vinyl voodoo lilies there, yeah. and I'll take a plastic snake palm.
Yeah, it's got the long part that could look like a devil's tongue. Yes, exactly. So oden is often sold from food carts, though some izakayas and several convenience store chains also serve it, and dedicated oden restaurants exist. Many different varieties are sold with single ingredient dishes, sometimes as cheap as 100 yen. So that's a dollar in U.S.
Jeez.
While it is usually considered a winter food or fall, some carts and restaurants offer oden year round. Many of these restaurants keep their broth as a master stock, replenishing it yeah. as it simmers to let the flavor deepen and develop over many months and years.
Yeah, this soup is started it 25 years ago,
it's
and
been
I'm still adding things to it.
A long time.
Yep. That's terrifying, but also
it is a little terrifying.
Probably delicious. The kind of thing that Anthony Bourdain used to talk about.
Yeah.
Why this specifically?
Okay.
It has nothing to do with aliens.
No.
It is fall.
I have a theory that maybe this is just me. I think maybe they're trying to put in more seasonal things, or somebody just really likes oden and they're like, let's feature this somehow, or like we need to have some more interaction here.
We just cut to a salary man eating oden.
Well, so interestingly, in anime and J dramas, it is common to see a salaryman eating oden and drinking sake at a food stand at night with coworkers. So similar to what we see.
It's just so weird.
I know, but it is a common thing. Regardless, oden is known as a nighttime food stall dish to eat to help you relax after a long day of work.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what it's known for.
With a dark beer.
Yeah.
Like a Suntory caramel brown or something like that. You know?
Would know more than me for sure.
So. Well, we don't even get most of the beers that
there's so much beer.
that Japanese companies make over here. But
that's
yeah.
true.
Like a stout, something thick.
Yes. Yes. To complement the thickness of the soup.
Yes.
Once it's cooked, you want it to take it off of the heat and let it sit covered for another hour. Oden tastes better if the ingredients absorb all of the flavors, but you do not want to overcook Oden as the fish cakes will break apart.
I don't know where I'm going to get cognac from. And again, I don't think it's pronounced cognac.
Konyaku, which is the Japanese
term. Yeah, but I'm going to make this.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to make this.
All right.
Go raid the Asian market.
Near me. They recommend that you make it in an earthenware pot.
That might be a problem. A Dutch oven work?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
And a fun little fact, the One Piece character Kozuki Oden is named after this dish, and it is his favorite food. His catchphrase, "I am Oden and I was born to boil," refers to the boiling required to cook Oden.
What is this anime?
Yeah.
Someday I'll watch One Piece.
Yeah. So there you go.
Is everybody's named after food, I guess, huh?
I don't know. I haven't watched it.
Well, you got a guy named Odin.
I know. Villain Gage, we rate a baddie 1 to 5 dark stars, 5 being the most wicked. No droid in this episode, but I thought we would talk about the new Black Moon Clan member, or at least new to us, Esmerode, or Esmerodo in Japanese. Esmerode is named after the old French word for emerald, which was Esmerode, spelled the same way, which is part of the etymology for the English term emerald.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways, I thought that was really interesting.
I like the fact that they're taking fancy words for gemstones and then using those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, guy's probably called Ruby in the Deek dub, right? But it's like Rubaeus, Esmerode. You know, you've got, I mean, Demando. That's not a gemstone, isn't
it? We'll get to it.
Huh. Okay. Well, anyway. A sticker for the future, perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's cool. And it gives them a little... I mean, we've talked before many times in the show about, you know, the Japanese love of French stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, I just think that really fits.
Yeah. And you can thank Naoko Takuji for that.
Oh, sorry. It's Naoko's love of French stuff.
Well, I'm just saying, credit where credit is due. She named these characters. I mean, there are a lot of Yoma in the anime that do not show up in the manga. And the manga is much more, it's short and things happen faster. You know, so you don't have as many characters.
In Sailor Moon Crystal.
Right.
What, we can just make this and it'll be shorter? Yeah, let's just remake this.
Well, Crystal, to be fair, is very closely, goes very closely off of the manga. So,
right,
yeah.
But the whole point was, you gotta stretch this baby out as far as you can.
I know. That's for the 90s anime, yeah.
You know, that's how you end up with a bokushi.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And you want that.
Yeah, I know. I love bokushi a lot.
You don't want your sailor soldiers to just like, you know, snap the necks of the bad guys and just move on.
Oh, that's not fun or interesting. Right.
Yeah, we got to keep returning. We got to milk this thing as much as we can.
Absolutely.
Even if we're just going to a charm school where we're going to learn from the bad guy how to be princesses.
Yeah, exactly.
That was so weird.
I know. But I thought we could talk a little bit about Esmerode's outfit too, which I thought was a black dress. But you're telling me is a green dress.
Oh, we're going to have this fight now.
But I swear when I watched it before, I've always thought it was black.
It's a very dark green. It is a forest green.
Wow, I have just always thought it was black. Okay.
Did you like that I nailed forest green?
Well, you're good with colors.
I would call that forest green. It's a little lighter than a true forest green.
But her.
All right, back to the show.
Back to the show. I love the boots with the inverted V at the top, and of course the statement necklace and bracelet with the large green stones. I just feel like that's so big and brashy, like notice me, like jewelry. But I feel like you have to have confidence to wear that.
I wonder if you know? I should run this through Photoshop and see if I can make all the greens red. Because what I want to compliment her on is her hair, which
hair
is green.
Gorgeous.
It should clash with her other greens, but it doesn't.
It doesn't. It's like a bright, like lime, almost neon green.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the same way that that often redheads can pull off wearing red, and they shouldn't be able to because their hair is actually orange, but
right.
It somehow works still.
Yes. And of course, her fan, which I think is red. And
she's even got brown eyes.
She like does a redhead have brown would. Eyes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Huh.
It's interesting.
I gotta think about this.
Yeah. Do you think that the gemstones in her necklace and her jewelry, do you think those are emeralds?
Oh, they must be, right?
Right?
Although they're almost a jade color, though.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's too green for turquoise. Teal, almost.
Maybe a teal-ish.
I don't know. I don't know how I know all these color
names.
I know so many colors?
I don't know.
I like that. I noticed, too, you can't see in the picture that we were looking at before, but she has the black crystal earrings, of course.
Yes. Oh, and I did want to mention also her necklace. At the base of her necklace, there is a crescent moon that is right side up, not upside down.
Huh.
So I thought that was interesting.
And she has coordinated her lip color to her fan.
Because, of course, you got to match.
This girl, she woke up 4 hours before she left the house.
Oh, for sure.
But, you know, she's killing it.
Looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah. For Subbu or Dubbu, where we talk about the most interesting differences between the sub or the dub, just one thing this time. In the English dub, Esmerald was called what?
Esmeralda?
Emerald.
Oh, okay.
You called it before. Esmeralda would be close, though. And I think I've seen, like, Esmeralda. Doesn't that also mean, like, emerald or green?
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah. But I do have some trivia, and a lot of the trivia has to do with the dub, but it isn't differences in the dub. So okay. in the Deke dub, starting with this episode, Vincent Carrazza voiced Darien, or aka Mamoru, through the events of Sailor Moon R up through Sailor Moon Super S, so and the three movies. Vincent had previously voiced Alan, aka Ale, in the Deke dub, and when he portrayed Darien, he sounded very similar to Alan Ale's human form, but when he portrayed Tuxedo Mask, his voice became deeper.
Huh.
So
there are some people who have like a character voice, and then they have a kind of regular voice.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as a voice actor, it's like George Clooney. He's going to get in a movie, he's going to go, well, I don't know what's going on here, and his head's going to waggle around. You're hiring George Clooney, right?
Yeah.
So like the voice actor Steve Blum, who was the voice of Wolverine, I think still,
yeah.
he's Spike Spiegel.
Yeah.
A very recognizable voice.
Yes.
He takes a lot of like side jobs in like video games. So he'll be walking around in a video game and one of the soldiers is just like, hey, what's going on? I'm Steve Blum. He's very recognizable. But then he can also do like, sometimes he'll do like a voice and you're like, oh, that's Steve Blum? Huh, okay.
That's strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But normally he's just doing like the regular thing. So I could totally see him going like, now I'm going to put on the Ritz here. Literally when I play Tuxedo Mask, I'm going to give it a little oomph.
I could see that. I mean, because you're, that's kind of Tuxedo Mask thing, isn't it? I mean, he has a cape, a mask, and he throws roses. I mean.
Panache.
Yes. That's the word I'm looking for. In the Deke dub, starting with this episode, Ray's voice actress Katie Griffin was replaced by Emily Barlow until the final episode of Sailor Moon R. Again, as a reminder, there was a huge break of 3 years in
yes.
the dub between last week's episode and this week's episode.
Yeah.
Barlow was then replaced back by Griffin for the remainder of the English dub, so Sailor Moon S and Super S. Barlow, however, replaced Mina's voice actress, Stephanie Morgenstern, for the Cloverway dub as Sailor Moon S and Sailor Moon Super S.
Oof.
So Ray's voice actress got replaced by an actress who then would become Mina's voice actress, so Minako, so Venus.
Huh.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
It that's interesting. I wonder, I mean, a lot of fans probably didn't even notice, but I noticed when we cut to the future, the dream sequence in this episode, there were sailor figures. We don't see their faces, but they're all talking. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's all the voice actors from the, you know, the present sailor characters.
Right.
Plus the dub that, or the sub that we have, color codes, you know, everybody's dialogue, which is really handy too.
It is handy. I like that. It comes in handy when somebody's talking off screen and I'm like, I don't know if I know who that is.
Yeah. It's not quite sure.
Yeah.
Five teenage girls or, you know, adult women sounding who sound like teenage girls.
Yeah. Yeah. And then due to the rush to dub the remaining lost episodes in the original North American run on Cartoon Network, all of the Sailor Says segments for the rest of the run of Sailor Moon are recycled from previous episodes. So they don't make any more of those.
Someday we'll have to tackle the Sailor Says's.
Maybe we could, Sailor Says. Yeah.
Maybe do a feature on that.
On Patreon or something.
Because I'm curious.
Like a lot of them are really silly.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, the G.I. Joe pork chop sandwiches.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no, but they're fun.
Knowing is half the battle.
I don't know if all of them exist on the internet somewhere. Like,
oh, so they've got
some of them do, for sure. Some of the most egregious ones do. And then a fun little thing is after Rubius talks about how Prince Demondo would never give him give up on him, Esmeralda responds, "Right, so it must really be something." And when she says that, the Black Moon symbol on her forehead is not present. By the time she says your incompetence, that is, the Black Moon symbol is back. So it's just one line; it's not there. So it was just an animation mistake.
Yeah. You lose a little authority when you're talking about mistakes and then you're like, you know, you just morph into a dog or something like that.
Good freaking point. So now we're up to where we rate the episode. I really like the scene between Ikoko Mama and Chibiusa. I think it's really sweet. And you think maybe she was like, it was a save. But I love that Ikoko tells Chibiusa that she loves her as if she was her own child. I think she really means that.
Yeah, I mean, she's been brainwashed to love her, so.
Okay, all right. And the Chibiusa base jumping scene and Mamo's no cell reaction were ridiculously awesome.
Banzai!
Yeah, seriously. But overall, this episode feels like they're kind of like stretching the story, even though things are going really fast. Plus, I know that she is a child, and I understand that she is upset, but Chibiusa just acts like a brat in this episode. But I mean, mostly it's understandable, but So I'm going to give this episode 3 out of 5 roses.
Wow. Again, a lot of criticism for a 3 out of 5.
Oh.
It's going to make me feel weird when I say 3 out of 5. And how, to me, this episode is like, you know that meme where there's like a rough patch of road and then there's like a, like 2 feet of pavement?
Yeah.
And then there's like more rough road?
Yeah, I totally get that.
It's like that. Where the rough doesn't necessarily mean bad. It just means things are happening.
Yes.
And we just hit, this is a very smooth episode.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of just goes right through, like crap through a goose.
Mm-hmm.
And there are good parts of it and there are bad parts of it. And I, you know, I love Esmeralda. I liked the Chibi's sort of moral dilemma, you know, the moral dilemma of a 6-year-old. But Rubeus is just proving to be, you know, the Jadeite of the Black Moon Clan. This guy is kind of a zero. And he's got this huge, he's got all this power and he's got a huge UFO and he's not doing much with it, you know. And again, I return to my beloved Star Trek, but most Star Trek two-parters have a lot of setup in the first one.
Yeah.
And you notice there's a lot more scenes where Geordi and Data are drinking slow gin fizzes and talking about stuff.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, okay, all right, we're going to get it to be continued
Yeah.
And then all the bang happens in the second half.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this is like.
It feels like it.
I mean, the stakes is high and, you know, everybody gets getting abducted and we're definitely, things are coming to a head. Like somebody's not going to walk away from this, but we're not there yet. And so for that reason, I have to give it just the, 3, and just go back to what I'm doing.
Yeah. I mean, I like Chibi's dilemma, too. I just, pancakes. But I think you equating Rubius with Jadeite is, wow, that really, I hadn't thought about that before. That seems like it fits.
Perhaps Kunzite?
Oh, Kunzite. So much potential. Showed up with a bang.
Rebase didn't even show up with a bang.
No, he didn't. So.
It's kind of like, what if we had dessert first and we just, fed through all the black, the Dark Kingdom people backwards and then ended with Jadeite?
Yeah.
It's kind of how it feels.
Kind of.
But we've got more to come.
We do have more to come. So my English title for this episode is Chibiusa's Mistrust, Pancakes or Bust.
Thank you, Nipsey Russell. Wow. Does it have to rhyme?
No, but I just felt like it.
My Deke title is I Want to Be Leaving.
What?
It's UFOs. I want to believe, but
I want to be leaving. Oh, okay.
She wants to go back home.
Yes, she does. She totally does.
I think it's subtly kind of clever.
It is. Next episode, we are talking about episode number 74. Rubiesu o Taose, Uchu Kukan no Kessen in Japanese. Defeat Rubius, The Battle in Space, the English translation, and the English title, Rubius Strikes Out, part 2 of 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's not striking back.
No, he's striking out.
Striking out.
Like Casey at the bat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Come on. Tell them why you know that reference.
Because of you.
I was just amazed that you never heard that.
I swear.
The outlook was awful grim from the Mudville Nine.
I saw a cartoon of it as a kid.
Yeah.
But it didn't like stick in my head.
Warner Brothers cartoon, right?
Yeah, I think so. But it didn't like stick in my head.
Casey at the bat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Little reminder of yesteryear.
Yeah.
Here's a reminder for the listeners to follow us on social media at @noob_sailor on Twitter and Instagram. We've got a Discord, which is free for all, where we chat about Sailor Moon and other anime, and there's a link in our show notes to that. And if you like what you hear on the show and you want even more, we've got a Patreon at patreon.com/sailornoob, all one word, where we've got outtakes, extras, and an entirely different podcast,
yes.
Animetification, where we watch random episodes of selected animes. Random maze?
Ooh.
I may have a portmanteau problem or a portblum.
Oh, come on. No. That's a portmanteau that blew up on you.
Become a soldier in our sailor army at patreon.com/sailornoob.
Well, that's our show for this week, and the name of the moon will be punishing you next week with another episode of Sailor Noob.
Bonsai!